Great. Well, obviously youth violence is a complicated issue, and many factors contribute to the incidence of youth violence. And we know interventions will have a greater chance of success if they are multi-level. But I do think that youth development programs are one strategy. They're one piece of the puzzle. So I'm going to talk about an organization that I helped co-found over 30 years ago when we were med students at Northwestern. And as my bio said, I forgot it was in there. Our goal was to improve the health and life opportunities of at-risk youth, because we realized early on in our training that a once-a-year well child care visit was not enough to improve the health of children. If we wanted to improve the health of children, it was important to get them out of poverty. And for most kids, education was the surest route out of poverty. We began partnering with Lurie Children's in 1993, so about 10 years after we started the youth program. And three of the med students who were really involved in the founding of CYP are on staff at Lurie Children's and are on the board of CYP still, and do a lot of the direct service still through the clinic and running the organization. But our partnership with the hospital was recently strengthened when two of our hospital administrators joined the board of CYP. And it's been interesting to see the evolution of the partnership with our hospital over the last 30 years. When we first started at Lurie Children's, or it was called Children's Memorial back then, it was kind of a charity on their event to give us donated space to run our program. But now with the advent of population health and moving into the systems, it's been good for the hospital to have this long-term relationship with a community organization. So for those who are not from Chicago and might not be familiar with Cabrini Green, this was a housing project that was about a half mile west of the Northwestern University Streeterville campus. And it was a housing development, and at its peak it had about 80 buildings, ranging from 2 to 3 story row houses, and some of them are still there today and are lived in, all the way up to 19 story high rises. And Cabrini Green had a reputation for extreme poverty and community and violence, so really it wasn't the most violent neighborhood in Chicago, but because it was so close to the Gold Coast, people thought it was. And over 20 years, there's this plan from the Chicago Housing Authority for the plan for transformation, and over those years, the high-rises were torn down, and the last high-rise was torn down in 2011, 1230 North Berlin, where we did a lot of our work. So when we started CYP, it started very organically. We had no conceptual framework. We just thought as med students this was the right thing to do. And so we had a lot of trial and error, and I'll walk through some of those experiences as we in this talk. And basically how we started the program was we just walked over a half mile to Cabrini Green and asked if the kids wanted to come back with us and play in one of the dorms. And for over half the kids, it was the first time for them to see Lake Michigan, which it was quite shocking since it was just a half mile away, but it was just how isolated the neighborhoods were back then. Any child was welcome to come, and there was no cost to participate, and there's still no cost to participate.
They hadn't seen Lake Michigan?
Nope. And so in the early years, we just started really simply. We had a Saturday program, and as I said, we brought the kids back over to the dorm, and these were before people had personal computers. This is the 80s, you know, so there was a computer room though, so we were able to use that, and there was a basketball court, and one of the dorms had a swimming pool, so we'd run some activities for the kids there. We targeted kids the easy age years, 6 to 12. It was about 40 kids, med school and law student volunteers, about as many volunteers as there are kids we served, and we had a really modest budget. We passed a hat around a pathology class and got enough money to buy CTA tokens to bring them on the 66 bus downtown, which is just along Chicago Avenue. But by the late 1980s, it was really clear that CYP, the Cabrini Green Youth Program we called it then, was not helping the kids. It made us feel good as volunteers, but we weren't really meeting the needs of the kids. It certainly wasn't well suited for adolescents. We saw that a number of our children became pregnant, or they got involved in gang violence. And so we asked the teens informally, what should we do to help keep you in? And they identified they wanted more teen-specific activities separate from the younger kids, more responsibility in programming, saying how the programs were run, ability to make some money and learn some skills. And so then at that time, we kind of asked us more in general about who do we serve, who are the kids that we're really trying to do our work in with. And so I hired parents from the community to do some surveys, community neighborhood surveys, and I pulled out the questions on violence. And so this was back in the early 90s. This is old news to most of us in the room then, but back then people didn't really understand how much community violence these young kids were facing. And these young kids, 7 to 13, 42% had seen someone shot and 37% had seen someone stabbed. 21% lived with a shooting victim and 16% lived with a stabbing victim. And actually, I doubt the numbers are any less than they were back then for some of our neighborhoods, unfortunately. So based on this, we knew we needed to do something to help address this problem. And so listening to what our adolescents had told us before is that they wanted an opportunity to make some money and have more responsibility, we started this program called Children Teaching Children, where the older kids teach the younger kids about a variety of health issues. So we got some funding to evaluate this. And this was really one of the first peer mentoring programs for violence prevention that were done. And we still have this program, and they're doing it with obesity and teen dating violence and things like that. But basically, we know that teens are a great role model for the younger kids in these communities because these teens are the ones that are successful. They're doing well, and they're able to translate better about how to negotiate getting through the community into higher education in a meaningful way for the younger people. And making the money and learning more skills was really important to the teens. And then with our evaluation, we were able to show that it was effective. And we had it was a case match cohort study. So with the cases, the young kids in the program, 7 to 13. And then we got kids in the community that could have been in the youth program but just chose not to be for whatever reason. And with the older kids teaching the younger kids, we were able to change the behavior of the younger kids. So they showed that violence wasn't as unacceptable of a choice. The controls attitudes did not change. We had teachers who didn't know who was in the intervention rate the behavior of the kids in school, and the cases just stayed the same. They didn't get better, but they didn't get worse, while the controlled behavior became more aggressive over time. And there was no change in ED visits because it was such a short study. It was like 18 months, so you wouldn't really expect to see much change. So it's some promising results for youth development as a way to help model pro-social behaviors. But over the next decade, we refined our model and expanded our model. So we started, as I told you, with this once a week program, which really wasn't enough, I don't think, to serve the kids to make any real difference in their lives. And we expanded to form this integrated, asset-based, comprehensive program for kids starting in birth in the clinic that we have at Lurie Children's. And we have a clinic in Washington Park, which I'll talk about in a minute, all the way through college and trade school. And we work with the kids very intensely to meet their educational, mentoring, healthcare needs, social-emotional learning needs in a very integrated fashion. So, for example, a six-year-old girl would go to tutoring on Monday. If needed, come see me in clinic on Tuesday, be in another tutoring program on Wednesday, and be in our recreation program on Saturday. And we work with the kids really intensely all the way until they go off to college. We have over 600 volunteers. We use donated space about 40 sites across the city, such as libraries, park districts, hospitals, universities. And we started in Cabrini-Green, and we still have a presence there, and we call it our Near North program now. Washington Park, which is on the south side near University of Chicago, we started that program in 95. In 98, we started Uptown, which is on the north side. And then a couple of years ago, we started North Lawndale, which is on the west side of Chicago. So even though we didn't have a conceptual framework when we started the program, we always thought evaluation was important to make sure we were doing what we were hoping, intending to do. And so some of our evaluations included looking at individual programs, such as Children Teaching Children, which I told you about already. We also look at the process, how long children are staying in the program, length of participation. We've done some qualitative work. And then most importantly, of course, is our outcomes. We look at barriers. We try to minimize barriers that would keep kids from reaching their individual goals and higher education outcomes. So this is just one slide. This is the Cabrini Green Youth Program, and just data through 2012. But you can see that our average length of participation is about 8 years. This is for kids in our tutoring program or our recreational programs, or a combination of both. In clinic, I might see kids up for 19 years, right, until they go to the first year of college, from birth through college age. Usually after the first year of college, I transition them to adult care. And then also, we wanted to ask the kids about the youth program. We did that little informally when we started Children Teaching Children, but we did a more formal study a little later on. And we looked at kids who had been in the youth program for a long term and then graduated and went off to college. And then we looked at a cohort who had been in the youth program for a long time but then dropped out in high school. And so we're trying to figure out what was going on. And so for the ones that were in who are the CYP graduates who went on to higher education, when we interviewed them, a third had a family member with some college education, but they really, most of them had really good family support. And then, but they did say that CYP helped them go on to college either through mentoring, tutoring, and financial support. But I think that family support was critical for their success. On the dropouts, we didn't unfortunately ask the exact same questions, but it was interesting because about half had noted that even though they dropped out, they found some benefit for being in CYP from new experiences or new connections with people, help them think about things in a different way. And half of the participants had dropped out because they needed money, and so that's why they got involved in gangs or selling drugs. And they suggested in this work is that we should develop programs for the adolescents to keep them in with pay or the ability to give back to the community. We had already started to work in that direction, but it was good to confirm we were on the right path. But also, a sizable chunk had dropped out because they got a better opportunity, which was really good. CYP kind of had prepared them either through their tutor to get them into like a private high school or to go into a competitive sports team or something that kept them away from CYP, but it was a good thing. And CYP was kind of the transition point. So dropping out was not necessarily a negative activity. And then minimizing barriers to keep kids from reaching their individual goals. So things that we look at are teen pregnancy, young women have access to contraceptives through the clinic, and so we find that our numbers tend to be fewer than compared to African-American teens in the city. And then avoiding delinquency is really a self-report. It's not a very strong measure for us. But most of the kids report doing positive things, not negative things. And it's probably true because we'd hear from their cousins, or they wouldn't be coming to the youth program if they were heavily involved and things that might keep them from reaching their full potential. But educational success is really our end game for us. And we find that our high school graduation is about 3 times the city rate. And for the last 2 years, 100% of our graduates have gone on to college or trade school. And what I think is just as important, or even more important, that our kids are finishing college at a rate higher than the national norms for underrepresented minority students, because that's been a huge barrier for young people. It might get into college, but to finish it, it's been tough. So we didn't have a conceptual framework when we started the youth program about 30 years ago, so I made it up on Saturday night. So it's still a work in progress. But what I think something like CYP does, or other youth development programs, it's an interaction term, right? There's some kids are going to do great no matter what, but it helps give that little boost to some kids, or for any kid, just to get them up to that next level. And I think the most important thing is strong, nurturing, and supportive families, but unfortunately not all our children have access to that. So programs like CYP can form an exoskeleton around these children through providing access to caring adults. Some of us have relationships for 30 years with these kids. They're young adults now. And it has a comprehensive approach, so it doesn't meet just the healthcare need or just the recreational need of these kids, but what an entire child needs to grow up healthy. And then it's that long-term commitment, I think, is really key. And I think this together helps boost the kid from a poor health or lack of well-being into more optimal health and well-being. So I think youth development programs are a very important piece to prevent violence, and because it's not enough just to say don't be violent, you have to give kids other opportunities to do well. And I present keeping kids in the program for 8 years as a process measure, because most researchers think it's only a process measure, but I really think keeping kids in the program is an outcome measure, because if they're with us, we know that they're safe and they're staying out of trouble and they have supportive relationships with all our mentors. But you can't just say come to our program if we don't have strategies to keep them in. And I think, you know, the ability to make money as they get older and to give back are strong incentives. It's what motivates most of us, I think, to go to work every day. And so I think it's important to recognize that teens have these same requirements as well. I don't know if youth development programs can replace good parenting and family role models. I think it's a poor second, but I think it's what we have. But I also am realizing, as I've done this longer and longer, is that if you can't reach participants as kids, perhaps you can reach them as parents. So now in the clinic, I'm taking care of second-generation children. So I'm the pediatrician of the original children. And I have two groups. One group is doing great. They've made it. They've gone to school. They've gone to trade school. They're working in the trades. They're going to college. And they come back because I just know them for so long. I was their pediatrician, and we have a great relationship, and it's a privilege for me to be their pediatrician of their kids. And then I have another group that are still struggling a bit, and I think it's often because my former patients who are now parents had unmet needs when they were children. And it's because some I didn't know what to do, like learning disabilities. I thought people who were on the honor roll at Chicago Public Schools at that time meant they were doing well, but it just really meant they were going to school. So that wasn't a great screening criteria for doing well. And so they had like learning disabilities that we didn't have the resources to address. And so you can't get a high paying job if you can't read. Or they had mental health needs, which it's still obviously issue today, but now we have recognized, and actually we have more resources with the Affordable Care Act, even though it's certainly not perfect. So anyways, I think these parents are really motivated, and I think we can help them be better parents to their young kids. So I think with a generational approach, we do have a chance to make a big difference and change that trajectory for all kids. And then I think really this long-term commitment from caring adults is so key. So I'd just like to finish with this quote. This is a 20-year-old quote, but I really think it sums it up. You know, we think often what we need to do to help end violence in our communities is something really, you know, earth-shattering. But I think it's really the little things that make a difference, that connectedness to another human being, someone that you feel that you can go to in times of trouble. Sounds a little corny, but I think that's really what it takes to help us get to the end of this youth violence in the city. So thank you.